Welcome to the Small Caps Podcast, where we discuss news and information related to ASX-listed companies and financial markets, keeping investors informed. Note that the content in this podcast is not financial or investment advice, and be sure to head over to smallcaps.com.au to get the latest market news. Now, without further delay, here's today's podcast.
Welcome back to Small Caps. My name's Kerry Stevenson, and today I am delighted to be with Carl Runde. Carl is the CFO of Osteopor. Osteopor ASX code is OSX. This is a medical device, and correct me if I'm wrong, Carl, but it's a medical device company, and we're going to talk about the Osteoplug, amongst other things today. Welcome to Small Caps, Carl. Good to see you. Let's talk about Osteopor and this breakthrough 3D printed implants, because they're really improving the lives of patients around the world, aren't they?
Very much so. Thanks, Kerry, for the opportunity. Osteopor is a company that's involved in conducting research. It designs, it develops, and it manufactures and distributes a unique 3D printed implantable scaffold that facilitates vascularization, so the blood flow, to accelerate bone and tissue regeneration. What it effectively does is it bridges the space between two pieces of bone where nothing can grow, using the body's natural process to do that. Our primary products have US FDA and Australian TGA clearance and a CE marked, so we can sell in those markets. And to date, over the course of the history of the company, even predating the IPO, we have now sold over 50,000 implants, and 20,000 of those were implanted over the course of 2020. So these biomimetic scaffolds are made from a well-known material, polycaprolactone. It's the same material that's used in internal sutures that dissolve over time. And ours do too, predictably, and they leave patients with only natural, healthy bone.
So, sorry, Carl, to interrupt you, but what you're doing is it's all sort of the cranial, so above the shoulders. You know, it's not for use in other areas, and it's a surgery which is a fairly common procedure, but you've got a unique take on that. So maybe can you just take me through the process a little bit?
So that's the really interesting point that you made there, Kerry. The scaffolds can be used in many different parts of the body and are used in special cases in terms of patient-specific implants in different parts of the body. Our standard products in terms of the regulatory approvals are for use in the cranial and maxillofacial space. But their application goes way beyond that into long bone replacement and so on, that we have quite a history of doing as well. But we don't have, we require approval for each case rather than just having standard regulatory approval across the whole market for those. If we just look at our standard products, just for the time being, and we can talk about the others for a moment, but just in the cranial and maxillofacial space, worldwide, there are just over 1.1 million procedures that are conducted that are directly or could directly benefit from one of our products, either the OsteoPlug that you mentioned at the beginning, or the OsteoMesh, or the OsteoStrip. Each one of those products can be used, you know, from repairing for resetting a bone flap after a craniotomy, to plugging a burr hole after, you know, post trephination once they've drilled a hole.
What's a burr hole?
A burr hole is a procedure where the surgeon drills a hole in the skull to relieve pressure on the brain. But really important, because if that pressure isn't relieved, it can lead to all sorts of serious complications, if not death.
Right.
So But once that hole's been drilled, you know, for both aesthetic and safety reasons, it needs to be plugged. And what better way to plug it than with a material that in which the bone naturally grows, and, you know, over a period of 18 to 24 months, it's as if nothing happened. And they know you don't need to use any permanent fixtures or anything. You don't have metal screws or anything of that nature. It sort of returns to normal over a period of time.
So you're is it regrowing bone? Because, I mean, you know, years ago, you'd put, what, a metal plate there. People would have a metal plate. And what you're saying is this, what you've got, actually helps the bone grow in that place. And so there's no foreign
quite material. Quite correct. So if you think about it, what we do and what makes us special as osteopore is we have the technology to manufacture a porous interconnected microarchitecture that has very similar properties to cancellous bone, human cancellous bone. So the bone that isn't the hard bone, rather the spongy stuff that you see when you sort of have a cross section of bone and you see all the pores, that's pretty much what our structure looks like once it's printed. We can implant that structure between two pieces of bone, and the blood and cells are absorbed into that scaffold through capillary action. So it draws it in. You can actually, you know, watch how as it draws the blood and cells into the structure. And that creates the regenerative environment that is ideally suited to tissue formation.
So got it.
You've sort of got what it is both a bridge. If you were to take a gardening analogy, it's you know, having the trellis as well as the
vines growing up it, I guess.
Yeah, and you encourage the vines to grow into it and so on. So the regenerative process begins with the formation of the fibrin network, and the repair of the damaged blood cells happens first. And then that's followed by revascularization, osteoblast activity, cells start to move in. And then as the cells migrate and proliferate, they create that hard bony structure. They attach themselves to our scaffold. And at the same time, the scaffold's dissolving into water and carbon dioxide and disappearing. And what you have remaining are just these little cells and you know, repairing the bone to its former state.
Is this patented? Is this unique to osteopore? And can you get, is it simple? It clearly isn't simple to do, but is anyone else doing it?
There are others who are trying to do it, obviously. Right. I mean, we would be worried if others weren't trying to do it, because, you know, then it would suggest that it's not that special. It's difficult, though. And this biomimetic architecture that has taken a long time and a lot of work to develop to create that successful environment. And there's some really great stories about in the press, in the public domain, about the success of our product. Yes, they deal way more with the patient-specific implants, because that's a big story. But, you know, just as much and possibly equally important are those 1.1 million procedures a year that could benefit from our technology, as opposed, you said, you know, the old, replacing the old technology of a titanium plate, that's not so old. They still do that now. They use titanium, they use other permanent materials. And that brings, I mean, the incidence of post-operative complications in those other materials is very high. We have a remarkably low incidence of post-operative complications. And also because over the long term, our product disappears. It's no longer there. It's just replaced by natural bone tissue, whereas the permanent implant is always there.
Well, that's right, because it's a foreign object. Carl, I'm actually quite fascinated by this. How deeply have you penetrated the market? How long has this been around for? And I'd love to know what the future is looking like. What sort of markets you're in at the moment?
So it's been a long road to this point. And as with any implantable, there's a tremendous amount of preparatory clinical work that needs to be done, needs to be completed to prove that the product works, that it's effective, and so on. So Osteopore has done that work. It has that behind it. As of now, we're selling into 20 different countries around the world. We cover a range of applications in different markets. So for example, in Australia, we've got regulatory clearance for the cranial and maxillofacial area. But for example, in Korea, we do some work and our product goes into aesthetic surgeries, rhinoplasty, nose work. And as I said, we've printed replacement pieces for craniotomies. We've printed tibias, large sections of tibia in some cases. So sort of 20 countries to get to the numbers. In those countries, so if you have a look at the size of the market in that specific area that we are playing in at the moment, so the bone graft market and the orthopedic substitutes market, we're looking at a value of around about $100 billion in the bone graft substitutes. $100 billion.
Wow.
In the permanent implant market, and the bone graft substitutes market is about, we expect it to reach about $3.9 billion in 2025.
Carl, you just said permanent implants, $100 billion.
Yes, that is, they're about sales of $100 billion permanent implants. Now we're talking about all permanent implants,
sure, here,
not only in the cranial and maxillofacial area.
So it is quite a big market, and you have...
It's massive, but it gets better because we're really excited about some developments that we've had in Singapore, where we've, in Singapore, we have approval to sell a dental mesh. And if you have a look at the dental bone graft market alone is a $1 billion market.
So what's the dental mesh?
When you have teeth removed, quite often the dentists need to do a bone graft to fill that space so that it doesn't shrink and fall and that they can replace teeth. The problem though is that the bone grafts can fail, and they're not really successful in creating the vertical bone growth that you need to create the platform for replacement teeth. Now, what we can do with our product is that it's been shown to be very successful in encouraging vertical bone growth. So after between 3 and 6 months, you really have a solid platform for replacement teeth, which isn't the case at the moment. Or isn't universally the case at the moment with solutions. So that's, something that's really exciting. And then the other thing that we're trying to do at the moment in terms of future orientation is we're working towards getting broader regulatory approval for orthopedic products so that it's not just a one-off special case that we can actually, and also to take a more modular approach to that so that not every piece that we do in long bone surgery is a special implant. So that's sort of where we're going there. So, you know, dentists were doing some work in the dental market in Singapore. Dentists here in Australia have expressed their interest in doing it. We're looking to set up a clinical trial here in Australia to get all the data and evidence that we need for TGA approval. And the same thing is happening in Europe and the US.
I have to bring this up. Has COVID impacted a little bit with, because you Osteopore have got products which are global, and you mentioned the US and you mentioned Europe. And I just want to say that you are the CFO, so we are going to talk numbers in a minute because this is an investor audience. They all want to know, well, Is Osteopore a good investment? But you've had four straight quarters of revenue growth in 2020. So while everyone else was locked down, Osteopore still had $1.5 million in revenue. It had growth. It continues to grow. But I'm just curious, do you think you could have grown even faster without this little hiccup along the way in 2020?
Very much so, Kerry. Right. Would have been able to grow a lot faster. The sales process, what we need, takes about 3 to 6 months ideally. And it takes a degree of in-person education and training of both the distributor and the surgeon to make sure that all of the accumulated learning through the clinical trial process and those 50 odd thousand cases that have already been conducted flow into each new surgeon, and they have the benefit of that knowledge to get the best possible results out of the product. Now, with COVID, access to the hospital and the operating theatre has been restricted. The number of elective procedures was restricted to make sure that beds were kept free in case of an emergency. Mm-hmm. And people just staying at home led to a significant reduction in accident and emergency visits. Because people weren't out and about and having the accidents that you possibly need or that are a precursor to requiring, for example, a burr hole, as we were talking about beforehand. So that did constrain business. And then, we're using the resources we have at our disposal to invest in scalable education and training materials. But that's not something that happens overnight. Mm. We invested the time. We grew our distributor network from 10 to 23 distributors last year. We used the time to get in touch with potentially suitable distributors and to build up that network to position ourselves well to start sales and to become active and effective as soon as the restrictions allow us, or the minimizing of the restrictions allows us to. So that is definitely something, growth there. We've also set up, you're talking numbers, we've expanded our manufacturing footprint and got those machines running so that we can actually scale up production very quickly at very low incremental cost going into. So as demand increases, we can increase output. And it's fairly easy. We've got enough clean room space. We've got enough machines at the moment. We will need a couple more if our growth is as we expect it from an aspirational point of view. But
As I said before, you've had four straight quarters of revenue growth, and I love to dig into numbers a little bit as well, Carl. So here we go. Hard-earned cash from investors going into Osteopore. You've got cash in the bank.
Yes.
So you're well-funded. You've got revenue coming in. What I want to know is give us the cash burn, give us the numbers in the bank, and let's have a look at that.
Sure. So, and I think this is really what differentiates Osteopore from a number of its small and mid-cap peers in the medical technology space. Aside from the fact that we already have regulatory approvals for our products and that we are selling, we've managed to raise. So we started the year with $9 million cash in the bank. Okay. If you look at last year's average quarterly cash burn at around $388,000. That suggests that we're really well placed now to focus on driving growth. We're not distracted by having to look for funding for what we're doing. We can invest all of our attention and energy into growing the market. So that's one of the first things. The other thing is that if you have a look, you know, in terms of numbers, and I think key to this is in those areas where we have approval, we are looking at accessing or engaging in our market expansion through the US, increasing expansion and access to states in the US, expanding into China, and looking at Japan. I mean, Japan's a fascinating market in of itself because they have about 124,000 cranial procedures a year just in Japan. So we're actively at the moment looking for a partner there that's going to be able to help us with the regulatory pathway that we need to follow to be able to sell into that market. We think it's going to be quite exciting. So in those terms, there's this market of just over 1.1 million. We're looking at a dental market that we're accessing now of over $1 billion. The orthopedic, just orthopedic bone market of $2 billion, so the orthopedic alternatives. There are a number of different places that we are playing in operating in that are, you know, significant market size that we... That also lends to something that I think is quite interesting for osteopore. Because the market's this large and we do something that's fairly unique, is a lot of what others may consider our competitors aren't. They're collaborators. We collaborate with companies like Terumo BCT or B. Braun, Johnson & Johnson, Stryker, because they have part of the solution in the biologics and sometimes in composite materials. And we have the other part of the solution. And working together, we both companies are in a position to produce way better results, both for the patient, simplifying the surgical pathway, and also as a result of all of these small differences along the way, we get to a position where it's less of a burden on the healthcare system as well in terms of the overall cost.
Carl, we are running out of time, so I'm going to have to turn around and say, righto, why should investors invest in osteopore right now? We're talking today, and it's a great story, by the way. Fascinating, massive market, and you've got a patent on the product you've got. You've got distribution, you've done your growth, you've got laid the foundation. Tell us about why investors should look at it now in 30 seconds or less.
No, thank you, Kerry. So yeah, firstly, we have the resources we need, so we're not distracted. We can focus on that growth curve. If we focus on growth at a constant or improving margin, we're definitely going to be adding value for the investors. And there's no dilution, so no distraction, no dilution. And if anybody getting in at this point in the journey is really, I would say, in early for the longer ride as we expand into those markets that I was talking about and complete the vision, which is actually moving beyond bone. And there's some promising things on the horizon there too.
So lots more news flow to come. And you heard it here first from the CFO of osteopore, Carl Hunde. No dilution, no distraction. They're on their way to creating value for shareholders. Thank you so much for joining us today, Carl, and we look forward to the news flow as it comes forward.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, Kerry.